I doubt whether there would be 5% of this country that would say there is not needed an inquiry into the banks.
The government is not proposing a Royal Commission, and we've opposed one consistently.
The message that the convening of a Royal Commission would send would not be positive for the perception of our industry is unquestionably strong.
But pardon my cynicism, Mr. Narev, you guys have done a pretty good job at destroying confidence in the banking industry over the last decade.
68 days of public hearings, 134 witnesses, more than 10,000 public submissions. Australia's Royal Commission into Misconduct in the Banking and Financial Services Sector is officially over. Royal Commissioner Kenneth Hain has made 24 referrals for criminal or civil action and 76 recommendations that he hopes will shake up the industry in a way that hasn't happened in a generation.
Do you have any regrets about opposing so vigorously this Royal Commission in the first place?
Look, I'm focused on the future.
Some critics say the Commission has squibbed it, not gone far enough to fix a system endemic with dysfunction and structurally flawed.
This is a huge win for banks and bank power. It is not a good outcome for consumers.
Others say the recommendations will destroy their livelihood.
Mortgage brokers fear the Banking Royal Commission crackdown on the industry could send many out of business.
However you spin it, the finance sector is now facing one of its biggest challenges since the deregulation era of the 1970s and 80s. So what does it mean for the country? And what will it mean for you, your mortgage, your super and your wealth? From the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain, a weekly podcast that gives the full story on some of the most significant issues facing Australia and a look inside the newsrooms that bring them to you. I'm senior economics writer Jessica Irvine, stepping in for host Tory Maguire this week. So it's finally here, but was this the great reckoning the public had hoped for? To help answer this question, I'm joined in this episode by Sarah Dankert, a business reporter with the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, who spent more time locked up in that Royal Commission hearing room than anyone deserves. G'day, Sarah.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And back off the podcast bench is Shane Wright, our senior economics correspondent in Parliament House in Canberra, to give some predictions on how politicians are going to handle this 950-something page report. Welcome, Shane.
Thanks, Jess. I've got the mouth guard in, got the knees taped. I'm off the bench, ready for bounce down.
Ready to go. And now my sympathies to both of you on Monday. You had the pleasure of being locked up in Parliament House for 3 hours with this 1,000 page or so report. How was that experience for you, Sarah, after a year of sort of sitting in on all these hearings and listening to the witnesses give their side of things, when you actually got your hands on this report?
Well, I'll admit I had a peak nerd moment. I was very, very excited to get the report. I was very excited as they handed out the boxes, more excited to find out when it was on a USB as well. In terms of like the big bombshell, and I think we had been waiting for a big bombshell, there really wasn't a massive bombshell in it, but there were lots of interesting points in the report that will have a huge impact on the system going forward.
Yeah, and we're going to work through some of them now. I think we should get straight into that. One of the biggest things that seems to have come out is the recommendations that Hain has made around mortgage broking and how when you go to get a loan, what it's going to be like and what sort of fees you're going to pay. So, Sarah, could you talk to us about, I mean, this was supposed to be a bank royal commission and now we're talking about mortgage brokers. What is it that Hain has recommended?
Hain has recommended that basically the entire system between the mortgage brokers, customers and the banks become a fee for no service. So a customer will pay a mortgage broker a fee for the service of arranging them the best value home loan. Up until that recommendation or the current status quo is that banks pay secret commissions to mortgage brokers. They're completely legal. These aren't illegal commissions, but they are completely secret. And so therefore the public doesn't realise that the banks are paying the mortgage brokers. And that's seen a huge impact on the way mortgage brokers behave and often, as shown in the Royal Commission, led to them allegedly breaching responsible lending laws in that incentivises them to help you get a bigger loan. And the bigger the loan, the larger the commission that the mortgage broker is receiving. And that's led to a huge number of problems.
So Shane, this has really been the political thorn, hasn't it, in this report for both the Coalition and Labor. What have the politicians said about whether they're keen to force consumers to have to pay for the advice that they get from mortgage brokers up front?
Yeah, that's right. We're into this point where if you don't see it, then you don't think it exists. But purely economically and business-wise, we do know that at the end of the day, poor old mortgage holder A and B are paying for these commissions. So from a government point of a political perspective, what you don't see is often the best thing. But Hayne has brought that out into the light, and that's where you've got the problem for Josh Frydenberg, who's already under huge pressure from the mortgage broking industry, which is replicating the arguments that were made by the financial advice industry, that if you go down this path of getting rid of trailing commissions or grandfathered commissions, then the world will come to an end. People will be living on the streets and cats and dogs living together, to quote Ghostbusters. That's the political argument for them. Labor has gone, right, we are going to accept it, which leaves them open to a fairly strong political campaign. However, they have left out the detail of how they will do it. So Hayne, remember, his recommendation is to bring this in over 2 to 3 years. That gives the, say, a shortened government, if it comes to pass from May, time to work through this, and whether that can offset the scare campaign that will come from the broking industry.
I just wanted to say that this is the power for the lobby groups in terms of the mortgage broking. I've never received so much feedback on stories during the Royal Commission when we wrote about mortgage brokers from brokers in the industry. They're very upset. And since this recommendation, they're very upset, and rightfully so. There's billions and billions of dollars a year at stake for this industry from commissions from the banks.
That's true. And the problem was, though, that Hayne just said, and he's clear, that the brokers don't give the competition that they claim they do, because they are tied to so many of the banks. And I still remember, I think it was in March last year, one of the early pieces of evidence was of a broker who had been cut off by the CBA because he wasn't delivering enough activity back to the Commonwealth. That's the problem you're getting to.
Yes, and what people don't understand is the banks have directly owned groups of mortgage brokers. So you walk in and you don't know that the person that is advising you on your mortgage is ultimately, at the end of the day, employed by one of the banks that they're actually recommending loans on. So, I mean, it is interesting to me that the mortgage brokers escaped the FOFA reforms, the future of financial advice reforms that we had years ago to clean up the advice just on general wealth. And financial advisors made noise back then, and that was hard to get through. Now we're extending it to mortgage brokers. But we have also seen Hayne, Sarah, make some recommendations on financial advice. There's been a banning of upfront commissions under FOFA, but there were also these grandfather's commissions. What's a grandfathered commission that people were paying?
A grandfather commission is a little payment that goes back to a financial advisor almost in perpetuity over an extended period of time, so that every year they get their little commission for selling you a certain product. And that in the past has led to the mis-selling of a whole range of, at the end of the day, quite crappy financial products. Some of those terrible forestry MIS schemes, the managed investment schemes that we all heard about in 08, 09, 010, and they all collapsed and blew up. They had massive grandfather commissions attached to them. And so this idea of I guess, if we stop the grandfathered commissions, then, and the grandfathering of other commissions, then we can stop the mis-selling of inappropriate financial products to people.
Yeah, and that was really at the heart of the fee for no service issue that was really prominent in the commission, because the banks sort of, or advisors who had people in these grandfathered commission products, didn't have an incentive to switch them into something better. First of all, they weren't really delivering any service for what they were being paid this commission for, and they didn't have any incentive to switch them over to one where there wasn't a grandfathered commission.
That's absolutely right. All of the commissions involved with the FIFA No Service situation, and then I guess lovely banks like NAB and AMP took it to a whole other level with just finding new fees to charge people that they knew there wasn't any service attached to. So those banks have really outdone themselves in terms of in the industry in terms of charging fees for no service in new and imaginative ways.
Now, moving on to superannuation, that was also drawn into this Royal Commission. Shane, we've heard a lot about super from the Productivity Commission. What has Haynes said on super that's going to change, you know, people's savings? What has he come up with?
Well, the biggest one is a single default, that you get defaulted into a super fund, and that's the one that is stuck to you like a Donald Trump piece of toilet paper. It doesn't go away. Now, this is actually very much in line with what the PC suggested with its right. You get defaulted once, except in its recommendations, it said, right, go to this best in show top 10 list. The issue, and we haven't heard this yet from the government, is that if you remember when the PC report came out, the government said, right, we will deal with that, with all those recommendations, when we get Hayne. Hayne has come. We're still waiting to see where they go in terms of superannuation, and because there are issues around what the PC recommended. There are huge question marks over who gets into the top 10. How do you measure best in show? Major issues in that space that haven't been resolved. And then the biggest gains from the PC were actually getting rid of the bottom 25%. That's where the people are hurting are really hurt badly. If you're in, say, the top 20%, top 30%, there's not that huge amount of difference. But if you're in the bottom 25%, well, you'll be living on canned food and preferably cat food in your retirement age. That's where you've got to get into some of the issues.
And has Haynes said anything on that, or it's just this having a default fund stapled to you?
There is very little mention at all about that bottom 25%. And it makes some sense that he didn't get into it. Remember, the PC spent up to 3 years going through the entire superannuation sector while Kenneth Hayne had everything from funeral insurance through to whether the banks are absolutely ripping us off blind. So superannuation, important as it is, didn't get quite the same sort of examination that the PC was given.
And I guess there were just a few little other things to mention, Sarah, on, you know, if you go into a car yard and you're offered insurance, that's going to change. And a few of the other little protections that are in there, what are the little ones that will help people?
Well, just talking back to super there, I do actually think that some of the things that will help ordinary people is one of the recommendations is that there's no more advice fees to be deducted from my super accounts. Most people who are in a my super account have gone into that because they've got, you know, a low balance, or they meet the other requirements of being young people. And I don't know many people in that cohort who are actually aware that they're also paying fees for the financial advice that they're not receiving on those superannuation products. And of course, I've been very interested, I guess, in the some of the changes to regulation, which will be which again will have a consumer impact. And that's things, again, like corporate regulator, the Australian Securities and Investment Commission, will now have power to intervene and enforce misconduct in the superannuation sector. And that's what led to that great line by Michael Hodge during the Royal Commission, which was, what do we do with when people are alone in the dark with our money? And that's a sort of recommendation that hopefully will shed some light on the sector that at this point misconduct therein had not been cracked down on or even supervised.
And I want to ask you, Sarah, about whether we're actually going to see anyone with a ball and chain around their leg. Is anyone going to jail? Because I think that's something people want to know. They want to see what sort of justice will actually be delivered to the banking sector. We'll have a little break and we'll be back with you shortly.
Hi, I'm Michael Batchelard. I'm the Investigations and Foreign Editor at The Age and The Sydney Morning Herald. The Age and The Sydney Morning Herald have by far the country's biggest investigations teams, breaking stories about corruption, crime, and social and political issues. We also have foreign correspondents in Asia, China, Europe, and the US. Both are expensive, but crucial to providing news for and by Australians that help our readers interpret the world. And if people value that, we need people to subscribe so we can keep doing it. Subscribers allow us to dig deeper into the important stories that matter to our readers.
Welcome back. Still with me is Sarah Dankert and Shane Wright, and we're pulling apart the Hayne Royal Commission report. Now, Sarah, I wanted to ask you, you're sort of more familiar with the legal side of things, having watched the commission close up. There were 24 recommendations, we're told, or referrals about criminal or civil actions that might arise out of this. Are we actually going to see anyone go to jail as a result of what he's recommended?
Well, I wish, and I think all of the public wishes that, Jess, but unfortunately, I think that's going to be very unlikely. And I think that's going to be very disappointing for the Australian public. I think we want to see some bankers in handcuffs. We've already had, the public floggings over the last year, and that's been quite fun, but actually locking someone up for a while would be great. Unfortunately, at the stage of where we're at and the referrals and the recommendations, and there were actually, there's been scores and scores of them in the earlier rounds relating to, as you mentioned, financial advice and home lending. What will happen is that the companies will probably be criminally charged in some instances. And I think people at home rightly say, well, what's the point of that? Well, the point of that means that forever we'll write AMP, which was criminally convicted of X or Y. And that's a reputation destroying sentence that actually has huge impacts on these companies. And certainly it showed on about a month ago when it emerged that AMP had been referred to the CDPP for criminal prosecution over fees for no service. Its share price sunk a lot. People don't want to be associated with that kind of brand as a customer or employees. So it's going to have a huge impact. Could some of the lower hanging fruit end up being subject to criminal charges? And by that I mean the celebrity planner Sam Henderson, of which there's been no explicit referral, but he did allegedly mislead his customers. Possibly Terry McMaster, who collapsed in the stand, possibly. But at the end of the day, I think it's important that ASIC does focus on the big entities that have been ripping off billions of dollars. And if that means that they can't pinpoint an individual because the banks are ruled by committees, as opposed to being able to find person X who said, ha-ha, let's gouge all the customers billions of dollars of fees, that's going to be nigh impossible.
I think people struggle with this concept of a criminal charge against a company. But as you say, that reputational impact will be important.
Well, companies are criminally charged all the time. And it's interesting that people balk when they talk about a bank being criminally charged, but the company that runs a trade union being criminally charged is just people just accept that that's a normal thing, or that a construction company, when a wall collapses, is criminally charged. That's a normal thing. Companies are criminally charged quite a lot. It's just that the banks haven't been.
Now, Shane, just to put this in context for people, I've spoken to sort of economists who say what we're really dealing with here in the Bank Royal Commission is the legacy of the deregulation era that we had in the 70s and 80s, when we sort of privatised the sector, we opened it up to competition, and we let banks sort of lend and set their interest rates in a more free manner. Do you think this is a turning point for our finance sector? Do you think this will clean up some of the problems that sort of were created by moving towards a more privatised financial sector? Or has this sort of been overhyped?
Well, let's see. We go back to 1985 when we had foreign competition, the move to allow banks to the cap on mortgage interest rates well before you came into the world, Jess. We're back into the early 1980s where credit was rationed.
I was there.
Yeah, same.
You weren't out there hawking for a home loan, let me tell you.
I wasn't.
No, and then you get through to the early 1990s, just how many banks went close to the wall then, HIH, Royal Commission, and now we get through the GFC and we're into this. Like, forgive me for being cynical, but we do go through these sorts of periods where there's a bit of high dungeon. We've got Sarah Dankert who's playing Cluedo. It's Colonel Mustard in the kitchen with the candlestick holder ready to belt somebody over the head, and then we'll move on. And that's a sad thing. But it's a sign of just how we move on into these things. I was talking to John Hewson yesterday, for instance, and he said, "Look, people will get excited. There'll be potential show trial or two, and then we'll go back to it, and the banks will go back to trying to maximize returns, And I actually think it does go a bit back towards the advent of competition that we saw in 85 that changed banking, not just in this country, but banking globally changed in the mid-1980s. That's when it went from just a little old guy with a tweed jacket and a pipe saying whether you could have a home loan or not to masters of the universe, bankers taking over the world and financing everything, which ultimately gives us the events of 2008. And we all know how that played out. Perhaps I've been in too many budget lockups, but I'm always cynical about this is going to change everything. No budget changes everything. And apart from, say, for instance, the Royal Commission that we've had into child sexual abuse, and they're bringing the Home Report or a couple of others, Royal Commissions sometimes deliver a great headline and then it sort of goes and collects dust.
And I think that's also been aptly demonstrated that during the Royal Commission, some of the banks continue to charge fees for no service despite recommendations. And even in December, one of the NAB bankers was, you know, urging his staff to sell, and hit your Christmas bonus targets. This is under the glare of the Royal Commission, and they're still not learning their lesson. And like Shane, I'm deeply cynical of the banks suddenly changing their ways, especially when you've got the NAB Chief Executive Officer, Andrew Thorburn, who is quite sincerely saying that he doesn't accept criticism, that he can't accept criticism. It feels very circular at some points and as though we're going to be on this road forever.
Now, Shane, there were concerns that the Royal Commission, if it did go too tough, would actually add to sort of problems in the housing market, that nobody would be able to get a loan, that, you know, it would contribute to house prices falling further. I guess, you know, for people who own a house, can they breathe a bit of a sigh of relief that they haven't gone tougher?
Yeah, no, that you're not going to see that. It's actually the issue around a credit squeeze actually goes back to APRA and the way it reacted to the influx of investors that we've seen. So the fact APRA, apart from, say, the Graham Samuel review, has been effectively let go, off you go, keep doing what you're doing, work harder, and we'll get ASIC to litigate the hell out of all the dodgy bankers. That part of the economic equation out of the Royal Commission is pretty sound and safe.
In terms of the regulators, there's a lot of a major shift from the interim report to the final report. You know, the corporate watchdog ASIC got an absolute shellacking in the interim report. It was told it was hopeless in, you know, no uncertain terms. And then the final report, they're getting more powers, and Hayne is basically given the new chairman, who's only been in for a year, James Shipton, a lot of the benefit of the doubt. You know, there are experts saying, well, if ASIC doesn't finally, you know, get its act together and litigate and stop doing deals with the banks, that it'll be run, you know, it won't exist anymore. We'll have to have another inquiry to stamp out, you know, to reform ASIC. But, you know, there's a lot of benefit of the doubt being given. And I know there's good people who work at ASIC and they're trying really hard, but boy, oh boy, do they have a massive cultural change ahead of them.
And I think maybe there's a cultural change for everyone in Australia to maybe just wake up a little bit and to have seen some of the entrails of how their finance system is working, how the people that they think are managing their money for them actually are. I mean, what advice can we maybe leave people with if you've been watching this Royal Commission and you're worried about it? What do people need to really think about when they're dealing with these institutions?
I would say to just read a little bit more. Read my stories, Shane's stories, your stories in The Age of the Sydney Morning Herald. No, putting aside that shameless plug there, I do think that just even dipping your toe in every now and again to have a look at different issues, there's great documentaries on, you know, online available just to learn a little bit more about it. But also to remember that you have rights and that the banks might treat your rights and tread on your rights poorly, but actually there are responsible lending laws, but there aren't responsible borrowing laws per se. And, you know, you should be asking a lot of questions. If that old adage, if it seems too good to be true, if someone's offering you $1.5 million to buy a house and you work as a journalist, for instance, perhaps you should think about, you know, your long-term wage growth prospects.
I would go to the oldest adage of all, buyer beware. And this report actually goes to aspects of, say, financial literacy, and the financial literacy of the general public in this country is pretty poor. But expecting anything major, look, the 1937 Royal Commission recommended the introduction of decimal currency. It took 29 years to get to that point. So if you're thinking that something will turn around really quickly,
I think that's a great piece of advice to leave people with. Buyer beware, no such thing as a free lunch, and you're going to have to read the fine print, everyone. Thanks for joining me today, Shane and Sarah. That was a great roundup of what we've seen. Seems like it might be a more painful process from here to watch what actually happens to the recommendations, but you'll be there giving us all the good oil, I'm sure. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Jess.
Cheers, Jess.
If you know someone who would enjoy this week's episode, make sure you share it with them, or better yet, grab their phones and get them subscribed to get new episodes every week. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. We'd love you to support the work that we do. Just pop subscribe Sydney Morning Herald or The Age into your search engine. This episode was produced and edited by Rachel Dexter and David Estcourt. Technical assistance from Cormac Lally and Yuji Shimada. And Tom McKedrick is our head of audio. I'm Jessica Irvine. Thanks for listening.